Hello again, everyone. Bruce Dumont welcoming you to our show for another day. It's nice to have you with us. We're coming to you live and direct on WXFM Radio from the Allerton Hotel on North Michigan Avenue. And at the beginning of the program, I would like to take this opportunity to thank Bill Nigut for sitting in for me the last couple of days when I was resting in bed with a case of cold, laryngitis, chest cold, and it's been going up and down through my body. Hopefully it's on its way out right now. At least I'm able to speak today, and I'm glad to be back here at the Allerton visiting with you on the radio and in the audience. And one of the reasons why I wanted to come back is because Dana Andrews and his lovely wife, Mary Todd, were going to be here today, and they are here today. And folks, welcome to the program. It's nice to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Bruce. We're glad to be here.
I'd like to begin a little bit later on. I want to talk specifically about the play that you're appearing in at the Forum Theater, The Gang's All Here, and I had a chance to see it last week and enjoyed it very much. But first of all, I'd like to talk about how you two got together, because I understand there was a vice president at Goldwyn Studios who wanted to keep you single, at least for quite a while. Is that true, Dana?
Yes, it's true, because the Goldwyn at that time was having trouble with United Artists, not the present United Artists, but it was the United Artists of Mary Pickford, Douglas Fairbanks, etc., and he was a member, Goldwyn was too. And when they drew up the contract, there was no agreement that they would all have to continue to make pictures. So it turned out that Goldwyn was only making pictures, and they were sharing in the profits. So he tried to break the contract and couldn't do it, so he just decided not to release any pictures. So he wasn't making any pictures, and I was under contract to him. He wanted me under contract. So his vice president said, well, then it might be a good idea if you squired some girls around, you know, when you get your name in the paper, because you're not going to be working for a while until we get this thing settled. And so I took it seriously. And so for a long time, Mary and I were just together all the
time. Squired is kind of a formal word for it.
And anyway, later on, I said something to him about it, the vice president, and he said, well, you're no good as a Lothario, Dana. You and that girl are together all the time, so you might as well go and talk to Goldwyn about it. So I did. That's another story.
How did you react during this period, Mary?
Knowing that your husband-to-be was
being built up as a sex symbol.
Well, in those days, they had people under contract. You know, people don't realize it's an entirely different thing now, because they don't have the big studios and they don't have what they call the stable of stars, which was kind of an unfortunate way to put it. But in a way, I felt that this was true, that they really almost owned the people that were under contract, so that they felt they could tell them what they should do with their lives, whether they could get married or not. Well, I resented that. I didn't think that it was their business. It was their business what Dana did on the screen. But of course, people believe that people are like the image on the screen, and they're trying to build up a young man, and they want him to be exciting to the fans. So he's more exciting if he's single and getting around.
Well, I think in fairness we must say, Bruce, that there isn't anything they could have done about it if I didn't do it. And I didn't take any girls around, so I didn't get any publicity. So he said, well, you might as well go ahead. A lot of people say, well, could they tell you to do that? No, they couldn't. They don't have that in any contract.
They don't have the right, but still, you have a 7-year contract.
And they can make things difficult for you.
And the option is all theirs, because they can drop you at any 6 months after 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't drop them. You see, it was all their way.
So eventually, as the Hollywood stories generally go, you got married and lived happily ever after. Do you recall the first time you ever saw Dana Andrews?
Yes, I played in a play with him before I started going with him, as they say. And in that play, I played a rather unpleasant character, and Dana played a very straight, square kind of a juvenile, which didn't give him any opportunity to be very exciting. So it wasn't until the next play that we did that we got interested in each other. But I knew him, and I liked him. And we both had tests at Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer in this early period when we weren't really interested in each other particularly. And I said to the girl, Frances Reed, who now plays MacDonald Carey's wife on Days of Our Lives, she was then a young ingenue and playing in a play with Dana and me. And they did a scene together where he's just the juvenile that brings the girl flowers, you know. So when we got back to our boarding house that night, we all lived on boarding house houses on El Molino Street where the Pasadena Playhouse was. We kept on our makeup and our little curls like Norma Shearer and Juliet, you know. And I said, well, Francis, what did they think of Dana Andrews? He's a nice young man, and he had a little boy. His first wife had died. And I said, I wish that he'd get something because he needs a job very badly. And she said, well, I'm sorry, but not a chance. And so Dana, then later on, of course, became a star, and Francis was working on stage, and we got together years later and talked about this.
I want to talk further about that particular era in Hollywood because it was one of the most exciting eras.
Yes, it was. We didn't realize it at the time. We thought it would go on like that.
Right. Well, let's talk about exactly what happened then and what happened to change all that, and we'll do that when we continue with our special guest today, Dana Andrews, and his wife, Mary Todd Andrews. They're currently appearing at the Forum Theater in The Gang's All Here, and we'll be back from the Allerton Hotel in a moment.
Look to the builders of happiness. Look to tomorrow today. Look to the folks at Skokie Federal. To the builders of happiness, look to tomorrow, today.
Even though you may have a pension coming at your retirement, you'll want extra income. So why not get a retirement fund growing now at Skokie Federal? Earn 5.25% yearly, compounded daily on passbook savings. Skokie Federal, 4747 Dempster and Lincoln at Oakton.
Look to the builders of happiness. Look to Skokie Federal today.
Now there's a new easy way to do all your insurance shopping in just one place. It's called The Insurance Store, Heil & Heil Insurance Agency. Shopping at The Insurance Store can save you time. Sometimes it can save you money, and it can assure you the correct coverage. At The Insurance Store, you'll find every kind of insurance you need, including home, auto, marine, aviation, life, health, and business insurance. At The Insurance Store, you'll find a choice of leading brands like INA, Aetna, Continental, USF&G, Chubb, and Fireman's Fund. You'll also find an interested representative who can coordinate your various insurance policies by looking at your insurance needs as a whole to be sure that you have the right kinds of insurance protection in the right amounts with no duplications or gaps in coverage. Need insurance? Call Heil & Heil today, 866-7400. Shop the new easy way at The Insurance Store, Heil & Heil Insurance Agency, 866-7400.
Bruce Dumont back at the Allerton, continuing now with Dana Andrews and Mary Todd. And Mary, you were talking about that particular period when,
yes,
at that particular time, Dana had, what, hitchhiked from Mississippi?
Well, he
Mississippi.
Did that in
Where
the,
did
that
from?
Was in the Depression days that Dana hitchhiked out to Hollywood. He'd gone to college, and then he worked in a bank, and he decided that was a very boring life, and he had gotten interested in acting in college, so then he hitchhiked out to California and hit the Depression, and that's he could tell that story.
And during that period, I studied opera. I studied opera for 6 years.
When did opera when did opera lose you in Hollywood?
When I went to an agent and he said, well, if you're going, he said, if you're going to the Met, you got a few years to go. And he was right. And I knew that. But he said, have you done any acting? I said, well, college, high school even, and a lot of stuff around Van Nuys and little theaters. And he said, well, why don't you go to one of these places around here where the talent scouts go regularly and maybe they'll see you and you can get a test at a or a part in a picture. So I went to the Pasadena Playhouse, and that is what changed my life, because I got interested in the stage instead of going on with the opera, and I got interested in Mary Todd. And so we've been married ever since 1939.
Prior to your interest in opera, were there other interests that you had that would not have taken you into a life as a performer?
Outside of opera, no.
Well, he took business law in college, and from the way he argues...
Didn't you work for Gulf Oil at one time?
Yes. That was the first thing I did out of college. You see, I was in a teacher's college, but my secondary major was business administration because I didn't want to be a teacher. Mm-hmm. I was going to a teacher's college because we lived there, and my father was a minister, and
had
a lot of boys.
Had 13 children.
And 8 boys there, and he wasn't going to be able to educate them and send them away to school. So we moved to a town where where he could preach in that town, and did. And so I had a business job the minute I got out of college and started work for the Gulf Oil Company, which is now Gulf Refining Company then, which is now Gulf Oil Company. And that was in about 1929. And that's when that depression hit. Well, let's see, 29, I was up in Austin. I got a bit better job as a head accountant for office furniture and stationery concern there in Austin. And that was when I decided that if I became, this dates me, Charles M. Schwab, who was the president of the United States Steel Company, I said, if I got to be Charles M. Schwab even, I wouldn't like business. And so I sat down in my room and said, Dr. Lawyer, Merchant Chief, I was unattached, and... So what do you want to do? And I remembered what a college professor had told me that when I was leaving college, he said, well, I don't know what you're going to do with your life, but I think you ought to think about acting because the stage, he said, because he was had been to Columbia University and he was principally oriented to the stage. And he said, you have characteristics which would lend themselves to a career on the stage. So I thought of that, and I remembered working in motion pictures while I was going to college, and I said, okay, that's what I'm going to do. I went to the boss the next morning, gave him a notice, and he said, what you going to do? Told him, and he said, well, my son was out there for 2 years, and he got one job as an extra, and he sat on a park bench with Greta Garbo, and he didn't even say hello. So he said, that was 2 years' work. That's not very promising. And I said, well, I'm going to try it anyway. And that's when I hitchhiked after spending all my money to give my friends a party. Giving my own farewell party from Austin.
How many times from that point to today have you wished that you would have, or did you think of giving up and wishing and hoping that you were back in Austin with a nice, safe, secure job making, a fixed salary?
Never. If I had it to do over again, even with all the precarious possibilities there are, whether you'll make it or not, I think they're even less than they were then. I still would do it because...
That's true, but there were periods when he wondered, like he didn't... Robert Preston was a friend of ours. He was then Preston Meservey. He was at the Playhouse. Victor Mature. This was a golden age of the Pasadena Playhouse where the young people came and a lot of them wanted to get into pictures. And Press had and Victor Mature, and he thought, what's wrong with me? I haven't gotten a contract. We were in love and he wanted to get married, and he did briefly mention, maybe he didn't think of it seriously, doing something else. And I said, oh, no, because you would always be unsatisfied.
Did most of the friends that you had during that period, and I would assume that you were in your 20s?
Well, I was. Time? I was. I went there when I was 17. I left UCLA. I went to UCLA very young.
You're originally from Southern
California. Mm-hmm. I was born in California, yes. And I went away to a girls' boarding school, and I did men's parts. I did Paul Muni's part in The Valiant. I cut my long hair to do that part, and I was very serious about the whole thing. And I was very restive in college because Ruth Chatterton was my big idol. She was, one of the first big stars of the talking era. And Ruth Chatterton had started at 14, and I was 16, and I thought, if I stay and go through college, I'm going to be 20 when I get out, and I'm going to be, really pretty old.
We have to pause here for a moment. Our guest, Mary Todd, who is appearing with her husband, Dana Andrews, at the Forum Theater in Summit, Illinois, and the gang's all here. We are all here at the Allerton Hotel, and we will all be back in a moment.
It's exciting being rediscovered when you've been around as long as I have. Lansy's Cashew Nut and Rice Crunch has been around a long time, too. We discovered Lansy's last year, and we've been hooked on its unusual flavor ever since. If you like long-term relationships, try Guy Lombardo and Lansy's Candy. We're dynamite.
Lansy Candy, a great summertime treat by itself or with ice cream, is available at Carson Peary Scott & Company. For the past several months, you've heard me talking about the Senior Citizens Public Service Employees Association and their sponsorship of Social Saturday. We've told you a great deal about the bargain prices each Saturday, but one thing we have not emphasized is the fact that the Senior Citizens Social Saturday gathering is open to persons of all ages. Because sooner or later, we'll all be seniors, and the sooner we learn of their unique problems, the sooner we'll be able to unite and improve things. Senior citizens are an overlooked resource in this nation, and it's time we start utilizing their talents. We can do so by supporting the activities of the Senior Citizen Public Service Employees Association. Social Saturday gatherings begin each Saturday at noon at 6800 Northwestern in Chicago. All food prices are reduced to a nickel, and that includes coffee, donuts, ice cream, and pretzels. And remember, that's for everyone, regardless of age. So join us this Saturday at Social Saturday. Seniors caring for seniors.
Hello again, everyone. I'm Bruce Dumont, coming to you from the Allerton Hotel on North Michigan Avenue. It's nice to have you with us. In case you have just joined us along the network line, our guest today, Dana Andrews and his lovely wife, Mary Todd, who are currently appearing at the Forum Theater in Summit, Illinois, in The Gang's All Here. It is a political drama and very well acted and a very interesting political drama. A little bit later on, we will be talking about that. But at the moment, we're talking about the drama of the life of Dana and Mary as they grew up, not only as a couple, but also creatively and career-wise. And we were specifically talking about Hollywood in the early 1940s and the late 1930s. And we were talking about how they all got together. As you look back on that period, was it as exciting as a lot of people are now making it out to be? Did
well,
you know that
course,
it was exciting
no,
when you were living
of course,
it?
In retrospect, it's entirely different. But I remember having a conversation with Robert Preston, who was a pal of ours there, and he said that he realized after he'd done Music Man in New York, was a big Broadway star, had been on the cover of Time, he said, still, the best times were when we were all at the Playhouse. And I heard an interview with Dustin Hoffman recently when he was talking about not going to the Academy Awards, in which he said the same thing. He said the best time is when you're working, because once you get there, then there's this big scramble about staying there, and then people criticize you, any little thing you do that's wrong. They're anxious there to help you. Clifton Webb said this to Dana once when they were doing Laura. He said, when you're on your way up, people are rooting for you, but when you get there, you know, there's a jealousy, and they pick at
you.
Yeah.
What was the most memorable? I know one thing you talked about Sam Goldwyn a little bit later on, or a little bit earlier in the program, and I understand that there was one time that you bought your way out, or you wanted to buy your way out of a contract with Goldwyn.
No. I actually, he sold part of the contract, and it was because of that hiatus I was telling you about earlier, when he was having his trouble with United Artists, and he wanted me, and he didn't want to have to pay all by himself. So he sold half the contract the first year I was with him to 20th Century Fox, and for the next 10 years I was under contract to both of them. So he sold half the contract to Fox, which gave me the best of two situations, Goldwyn, an independent, and 20th Century Fox, a big studio. So I started at Fox doing larger parts in B pictures. The first picture I did was a picture with a what they call a Wurzel picture. Zanuck was at the head, and Wurzel was on the B pictures. That was later phased out, the B picture part of it. They didn't do those after about 45, somewhere in there.
Where did the term B picture come from? Is it just A and
well,
B?
Well, A and B, that's all. That's
lower
all.
Budget?
Yeah. And for a girl like Lynn Barry, for instance, she did so many of them, they called her Queen of the Bees.
It was a way that young people could learn,
it was a training school.
Before you hit the big pictures, to have learned your craft, because it's very bad to suddenly have a big part in a big picture and not be prepared.
See,
Ellen Burstyn, for instance, people weren't conscious of her. Her name was Ellen McRae, and I just recently read an article about she changed her name, she changed her entire approach to acting, because she'd done a lot of, she said, Claire Trevor, boozy blondes, and people don't know that, but she learned a lot before she became a big star.
How many pictures were being made at that particular time? Were they all
made,
the studios always working?
Roughly around between 400 and 500, sometimes over 500 pictures a year. And that, of course, is not even approached today. They make 150 at best, and but they're much, much bigger pictures. One of the things that had to do with the phasing out of the B pictures was the fact that the government made them divorce theaters from the studios, and they could no longer depend on booking pictures, whether they were any good or not.
It became more of a gamble for them.
Yes, it was. It was more competitive, and that's the reason why they had to divorce it. That's why the law was originated. And but when I started working for, well, being with Goldwyn and working in A Pictures Y, I had the good fortune of being in well, four pictures with Gene Tierney, including Laura, which was very early in my career. But in those days, Bruce, it seemed to me like forever, from 1939 to 1942, when I thought I had practically failed because I hadn't played a part like Tyrone Power at 20th Century
Fox. Then Dana went on to do, you know, a tremendous number of pictures in the 40s, one right after another.
Well, sometimes three a year.
The period in the 40s is an interesting period as far as I'm concerned, because I think probably more than any other period, the motion picture was used as a propaganda force. I mean, we were a nation at war. We were a world at war during that particular time.
Right.
You were an instrumental part of that era in American filmmaking history and American political history.
Yeah.
You were creating the climate. Were you aware of the pressure that was on you during this particular time? What was your feeling in your relationship?
Well, the pressure was everywhere, Bruce. I mean, while I was doing practically every rating there is in the Army and the Navy and even the frogmen and the Air Corps, as they called it in those days, the people were in the war, and I wasn't. I was in at home because I had children, and I was a little older than they were taking in the first part of the war. But I had been accepted for general service in the last year and had made an arrangement with Goldwyn to pay Mary while I was in the Army so that I would come back to him when I came out of the Army. But I never was called because things began to get better. But I was in any number of war pictures. And so many people today who are 50 years old and older, you know, that were in the war, that they were telling me, oh, well, we saw Laura out in the Pacific and the air raid siren came while the picture was going. We had to stop, you know, and we got the projectionist out of his bed, you know, at 4 o'clock in the morning when the all clear was out. And said, we want to see the rest of the picture. And that's where they saw it. Well, no, I was not particularly conscious of any pressure, particularly pressure on me. I was doing what to me was a great opportunity to stay at home and work at the same time.
And you were, but yet you were creating an image, granted varied images, because you were talking about a number of different pictures, of the American man during that particular period at a time when a lot of husbands and boyfriends were away, and there was no dominant male image in the minds of American women.
That's one of the reasons why Dana became a star. He could tell you the story about Purple Heart.
Yes, Spiros Skouras, the chairman of the board, 20th Century Fox, and Daryl Zanuck told me at different times, separately, one not knowing that the other one had said, one day you'll want to know when it was you became a star, and they said it was because of the Purple Heart. And this was through a strange period of, a series of circumstances. Principally, I was appearing with Woodrow Wilson, and the New York office had gone down to Philadelphia to see it. Everybody under contract with 20th Century Fox was touring with it in order to get people to come in and see it, and they wanted to get the reaction, etc. And when Georgie Jessel introduced me on the stage among a number of other people, like Carmen Miranda and Alexander Knox and Geraldine Fitzgerald, etc., the roof went off, and I was completely mystified, and Georgie Jessel yelled at me on the stage because there was so much noise going on. He said, what the hell do you do, sing? And this was when Frank Sinatra was coming along, you know. And I said, Georgie, you know more about it than I do. I don't have any idea. Later they found out that quite a number of those audiences, of the audience there, had been in that theater the week before to see the Purple Heart. And their husbands were in the Air Corps, an awful lot of them. And I was identified. They identified me with their husbands as being this great hero of the Air Corps.
And Dana was the leader. He was always the leader.
I was the leader of the group, you see. And so when I was introduced, they said, we've got something here. And later that evening, Spiros Skouras came over, and I was sitting with a girlfriend of one of the publicity men at a table at the Warwick Hotel. And he came over, and I thought he was coming over to speak to me, but he didn't even say hello to me. And he just looked at the girl and said, young lady, do you know that this man is married and has two wonderful children?
He didn't really care about that until he became
important
property.
He was afraid I was going to get some bad publicity.
Couldn't let that happen. We have to pause here for a moment, and then we will continue with Dana Andrews and Mary Todd Andrews. And when we come back, we'll talk about the play they're currently appearing in at the Forum Theater in Summit, Illinois. The gang's all here. Don't go away.
If you need shoes, you go to a shoe store. If you need hardware, you go to a hardware store. But what if you need insurance? Where do you go? Now you can do all your insurance shopping the new, easy way in just one place. It's called the Insurance Store, Heil & Heil Insurance Agency. At the Insurance Store, you'll find every kind of insurance you need, including home, auto, marine, aviation, health, life, and business insurance. At the Insurance Store, you'll find a choice of leading brands like Aetna, INA, Continental, USF&G, Kemper, and Travelers. And you'll find trained professionals eager to help you buy just the insurance you need. Shopping for insurance? Looking for an interested insurance representative? Shop the new easy way at the Insurance Store. Call Heil & Heil today, 866-7400. Find out how easy buying insurance can be, 866-7400.
5 cents for coffee, donuts, ice cream? Sounds ridiculous and impossible in this day and age, doesn't it? Well, to those of you who have visited the social Saturday gatherings each Saturday at 6800 Northwestern, you know that the impossible prices of the past have returned, and what a pleasant surprise that is. The prices are part of the social Saturday philosophy of making life easier for our senior citizens. The effort is sponsored by the Senior Citizens Public Service Employees Association. They're a group of retired Americans who have joined together to promote understanding of the senior citizen. And their group believes that people of all ages must join in this communicative process. And that's why their doors are open to everyone, regardless of age. This Saturday, see for yourself. Make plans to stop by and return to those low-priced days of yesteryear. The doors open at noon. Social Saturday, 6800 Northwestern in Chicago. Seniors caring for seniors.
Look to the builders of happiness. Look to tomorrow today. Look to the folks at Skokie Federal. Building happiness in a saving way. Look to the builders of happiness. Look to tomorrow.
Few families can predict cash needs more than a year ahead. That's why Skokie Federal's one-year 6.5% certificate is a best bet. Pay substantially more than passbook savings, yet just a one-year term, and only $1,000 minimum. Skokie Federal Savings, two offices to serve you.
Look to the builders of happiness. Look to Skokie Federal today.
Bruce Dumont back at the Allerton Hotel. Dana Andrews and Mary Todd Andrews are our guests today. The phone number is 591-1246. 591-1246. If you have a question, feel free to give us a call. 591-1246. We're back with Dana Andrews. And Dana, you were making a comment about the microphones and the...
Oh, yes. Well, I recently did a, I think it was a pilot for a series in television with a young actor by the name of Tony DiBianca, I think his name was. And, I was as close as I am to you, and I couldn't hear my cue from him because he was talking so low. This is the difference in acting today. Now, we who act on the stage, we have to learn to project. And, of course, I started, as I said a while ago, studying opera. But now the actors who just work on television, they have to relearn something if they do work on the stage or if they work in a motion picture where they don't have those microphones. Because you couldn't get by with what they do today in the old days at all, because you couldn't be heard. They couldn't pick it up on the mic. Because I couldn't. It was 4 or 5 feet from him, and I couldn't hear what he was saying. He was speaking distinctly, but not loud.
Do you find that when you were starting out, there was live stage and there was, you know, motion pictures, and you were trained and you could go into either area. Do you find more and more actors are perhaps setting themselves specifically to be an actor just on film, and they never want to go in front of an audience? Do you think they're being more specialized and selective in how they're charting their own careers these days than they were when
I not only think that they are doing it, but I think that the opportunities are becoming such that they will be only working either on television or film, unless something radically happens. This brings up a completely new subject, Bruce. Is I'm very worried and very sad about what is happening to the stage today. My wife and I were just recently in New York, and there are two plays, one of which we had seen earlier, months before, Only two plays that we thought were worth going to see. It was the only two straight plays there are on Broadway of any note, which is Absurd Person Singular and Same Time Next Year. And those two are the only two. Well, what are we going to do for plays? You know, Chicago doesn't originate play very much. They try sometimes, but...
some of them are folded here, some of the
right.
theaters.
Yeah, well, Joseph
and
Papps,
I think people are used to staying home, and it's just a question of getting out and getting in the habit of going to the theater. That's part of it.
People are just not oriented to the theater today because, one of the reasons, they never have been, really. But there was a time when there were on Broadway 500 plays in a year. And they were not all hits, but you could put them on because the people went to the theater. But now they have movies, which they didn't have then, and television, of course, is a great competitor. And people are getting now, their attention span is getting so short.
Isn't part of the problem the climate that is created in New York by the critics? In other words, a play has to be so good, it doesn't even have to be good necessarily to be, raved by all the critics. It just has to fall into what they particularly like.
Well,
at that
it's an economic
moment.
Problem too.
But didn't they create the economic problem?
No, Bruce. Going on ever since there've been plays. You go back and look at 50 years ago, 75 years ago, on Broadway, the critics were panning the things that they didn't like, just like they have.
Yeah,
recently.
But the prices are higher now in New York, and
but there wasn't any choice either. You see, they didn't have television and they didn't have any movies. But now they do have
That's
movies,
right.
and television is so convenient. And
so they're getting lazy.
Yeah,
so
I
we're losing
so.
An art form
also,
because of
Also, that's
laziness.
One reason that dinner theater came in, I think, because the man thinks, well, if he goes and he doesn't like to play, he can sit there and have a few drinks, you know. And the wife figures, well, I don't have to get dinner and rush out to the theater because at home they're used to sitting around and having a few beers or maybe eating a sandwich or something. But when we used to go to the theater, it was a great excitement and a special event. You gave your total attention. There was the orchestra, you know, the introduction. And you know, the curtain went up, and you gave it your total attention. Now, an actor has to be, you know, it's cut up with commercials, and the everything has to be done very quickly, and people aren't used to sitting down and giving their total attention to a play.
And completely losing themselves
yes.
in whatever their particular problem
yes.
is at that particular time. The play that you're in now... I have described it as a political drama, and it is a political drama, but you made a point before we went on the air today that perhaps it should have been promoted in a different way because of the fact that a lot of people are completely turned off to politicians
yes.
and politics. Do you want to elaborate
yes,
a little bit
well,
on that?
Yes, well, I think, you know, after all the talk about Watergate and this, of course, at the time that all these disclosures were coming out, that was the best show in town with Sam Irvin and all these characters. People were very interested. But now this is different. They are sort of fed up, and when you say political, they feel frustrated. They don't know what to do about the situation that they feel is bad. I don't think they feel they have any great leaders, and so they don't want to hear about it. But they are interested in the human side of LBJ or Nixon, or in this case, it's based on, it isn't actually Harding, but it's based on the Harding administration. And it's about his life and what drove him into the presidency where he shouldn't have been. And this is really
one of the things was a pushy wife.
Yes, although I feel that she could have been stronger, you know, the character could have been made stronger. But anyway, there are a great many good character parts in the play. I think that's very interesting. All the men, the finagling that goes on behind the scenes to make a president. But people enjoy that when they get there. But they're a little bit afraid that it's going to be dull.
But it's not really, to say it's a political play, I think is really misleading. Because like Plaza Suite, you know, it's not a hotel play.
Right.
It's not about the suite. It's about human beings.
Mm-hmm.
And The Gang's All Here, as the title implies, is about a gang of people who are in politics. But the chicanery that goes on and the deception that goes on could be in a corporation or any other unit of our society.
It's a lust for power and manipulation
yes,
and things of that nature.
That's right. And it's greed. And this is political. It always has been. political, but it's also persists in corporations and churches even. Well, they have a lust for power. My father was a minister, and there was always this ambivalence about whether he was really presiding over the arguments that were going on, or whether he was trying to bring the message of the Bible, of God, to the people, because it was constantly there. And this happens in clubs, golf clubs, yacht clubs. You have the same thing, but it also happens in the government. I would say that the political background of Washington is what the play deals
with. Well, the fact that Harding had an illegitimate child is still interesting to people.
Definitely.
And, you know, this is the sort of thing that comes out that is intriguing, because you realize that they have feet of clay.
One of the things that this play demonstrates is to watch out for the cronies, watch out for the ones who attach themselves to the star or whoever.
That's right. It's called the gang.
The gang's all here. And Richard Nixon had his own gang, and we can argue for a long time as to whether who was really leading who. But part of that particular problem was the isolation of the man.
Yes.
And part of the problem was the palace guard. Do you think that we have learned enough from the Watergate situation that we as a people, as a constituency, will not allow something like that to happen again? Or are we going to become lazy as we have been in saving the theater?
I'm afraid people are getting disinterested. They feel that there's nothing much they can do, and this is the dangerous thing. I think that they should learn from Watergate, and I can share their feeling that we don't know exactly what to do, and I'm not happy about any of the leaders that are coming along, but that's something else again. But in this play, see, there was the similarity of the attorney general is corrupt, the whole thing. But poor Harding was a likable, lovable character because he didn't realize what was being done to him. There's the big difference. And that it brings up interesting contrasts.
I think to ask if people have learned, that is the question. I don't think that we can know the answer now, because it doesn't appear that they have learned a great deal. Because, for instance, without being particularly critical of the present president, instead of his actions as a president of the United States, the emphasis now by the newspapers and the media, or the radio and television, is on his personal life, which is really nothing, has very little to do with the presidency. You know, he's a nice guy. Well, a nice guy was also Harding, and there was nothing unpleasant about him. And the thing is that the government was not run properly, and that is what is the most important part for us to do. And Mr. Rusher, I heard him, I think, on Cup Show here, was saying not long ago that it's mismanagement of the welfare program and these programs which the liberals want, and I'm a liberal and I want them, but they have got to be managed so that the money is not squandered, that you're really getting the money to the people who need it, instead of the bureaucracy, which is supposed to dispense the money, is getting maybe more than a third of the money goes in the dispensing of it. Well, this is ridiculous, and it's just mismanagement, that's all, and it's that personal greed thing again. And if we're always going to have bad government unless more people take a personal interest in what goes on in the government and become concerned themselves and involved in it, you're going to have a political organization running the government instead of a governmental group of people who are interested in government rather than politics. And there is a difference, there's a vast difference in between these two.
Although there are very few things that you can say categorically, I think one thing that can be said in that respect is that you can generally tell a person by the company he keeps or by his friends. In the particular case of the character that you play, he surrounded himself with people that he felt comfortable with, that he liked, but in reality, they weren't really sharp, and in most cases,
they were cronies.
They were all crooks.
Yeah.
Do you think that it would be advisable for future presidents to run and to list as they run their entire cabinet or the people that they will surround themselves with?
They sometimes do, Bruce, but the facts bear out the fact that they forget them after they're elected. They say, we're going to have top caliber men supporting us in this administration. And then if they had a commitment from those people who are saying, I will, and I get them to keep that commitment after the election, it would be fine. But they don't do it. They always say they're going to do it. And then when they get in, those people won't take the job, or something has come up that they can't do it. And so they end up by getting people that are most convenient and much more along the lines that they would like to have them. And it gets more of the crony idea than we would like to see. Almost every election that I can remember, there have always been these promises that we're going to do this. We're going to get a blue ribbon committee to study these problems and all of it.
And then nobody agrees on the blue ribbon committee.
That is correct. I think that for instance, right now, the New York situation, Mayor Beam, he doesn't want to have anybody supervising his dispensing of the money through this MAC, as they call it, and this is just a political situation. He says they're trying to humiliate him, and actually, they're not going to get people to buy the bonds of New York unless somebody is looking out for it better than they have been able to do in that government. And I think it applies to the national government, too, that the people will have confidence in the government when the government shows that they deserve it.
Okay. Dana, we have to pause here for a moment. You're talking a lot like a businessman, and that has been an integral part of your life in the last several years. And I want to talk about that and also about we talked about people glomming on to people who are either stars or presidents of the United States. I'm sure that's happened to you along the way, and we'll talk about that when we continue from the Allerton Hotel with Dana Andrews and his lovely wife, Mary Todd. They're currently appearing at the Forum Theater in Summit, Illinois, and the gang's all here. And as Mary said, if you want to go out and see live theater and help support it in the city, and also just to get away from television, don't sit home and watch television every night. They're in their about third or fourth rerun anyway during the summertime. Get out, take a little ride. And then one of the surprising things that I live in Evanston, as most people know, and when someone mentioned to me Summit, Illinois, I said, where on earth is Summit, Illinois? And really, it's only about 15 minutes from the Loop. It's a quick drive out the Stevenson Expressway.
And I don't know Chicago at all, and I found my way there in the car by myself.
It's easy.
First time without any trouble at all, and it's about 20 minutes from the Ambassador East.
That's right. It's Stevenson just got off at the Harlem Avenue.
A lot of people
Avenue.
Come
You're
from the
close.
North, they tell me, there, the northern part of Chicago.
It's so simple.
Yeah, it's very easy to get there. So go on out and see the play. It's in town through the 26th, I believe.
24th.
Okay, I believed wrong. I want to talk right now about Dominick's, something I believe in. Here are some of the specials you will find at Dominick's. U.S. number 1, California, La Rota Red Ripe Plums for 33 cents. Regular or sugar-free Dr. Pepper 16-ounce bottles for 99 cents plus deposit. And Maxwell House Coffee, look for the jar with the stars on top. This one is a tin, 2 pounds for $1.59. Stop in and take advantage of Dominick's Total Savings Policy.
In the fast-paced automated world of today, it's nice to know that some people have not forgotten the human touch. And in the candy business, it's Elmo Lanzi that maintains this tradition of excellence. For over 50 years now, Elmo Lanzi's products have meant handcrafted quality. His cashew nut and rice crunch has 3 times been selected Candy of the Year. Try it, and you'll agree. Lanzi Candy, the candy of the stars. A great summertime treat. And it's available at fine stores everywhere. Secondino's Beauty Salon at 67 East Oak cares about you and the look that's right for your hair. With individualized hair cutting designed to complement your lifestyle. With flattering frosts, streaks, highlights, and coloring to enhance your personal look. With natural curls and waves through Uniperm's special technique. You're important to us at Secondino's. 944-7026.
Bruce Dumont back at the Allerton Hotel with Dane Andrews and Mary Todd. Mary, I'd like to turn to you for a moment because I'd like to talk about the role of an actress who falls in love with an actor and has to decide early in her career that she is going to be a wife and a mother and supportive to her husband as opposed to going out on her own to becoming her own a star in her own right. Was that a tough decision for you to
make? Well, of course, I don't know whether I would have been a star or not.
Well, but you had the hope when you made the decision.
Yes, I had gained a lot of attention at the Pasadena Playhouse where we were, a great deal of in comedy and young character parts. And I had had screen tests, and I was a little too fat. And in those days especially, you had to be extremely thin, but they said the camera put about 10 pounds on you. And, well, when I fell in love with Dana, I lost 30 pounds. But then I was in a different situation because his first wife had died. He had a little boy. And so if I married him, I had an instant family. And it's very difficult still, you know, with all the women's lib and what I'm all for, what is happening with women today. But still, the problem isn't solved. What do you do if you have a family of, say, I had four children, three of my own and plus David that I'd had since he was 7 years old and was like one of my own. So I really don't know. I don't think this problem will ever be solved. It's you have to leave the children with someone.
It's like O. Henry's Roads of Destiny. Which way you go, you never know because you didn't go but one way.
Yeah, and you have to make the choice, and I made the choice, and I don't feel that the choice was wrong because I think I read an article by Katharine Hepburn recently in the Journal, and I think that she is I admire her very much as a person as well as an actress, and she said she wouldn't have inflicted herself on any husband because she wanted to be a star, and she knew she wanted to be a star, and the relationship she had with Spencer Tracy worked out perfectly because he didn't want a divorce, mm-hmm. and yet they were devoted to each other. It wasn't just a little affair, but she had her professional life that she wouldn't give up for anything, and she said she didn't think she should have been a mother, and I don't either. I know women who, I don't say you can't have a job and be a mother, but a star is something else because you've got to be, you know, it's an egocentric kind of a thing, and as David Wayne's wife Jane said to me, you can't have two prima donnas in the family, and I don't think you can.
All right, being someone who at one time liked the applause and liked the recognition of being in public, to what end, and everyone has an ego.
Yeah.
And they always talk about the male ego. Well, the you know
Everybody.
Females have egos too.
Right.
To what extent, I would assume it's been done very well, being married to someone famous who walks down the street and probably 9 out of 10 people will recognize your
yes.
husband. What does that do for your particular ego?
Well, I've been married almost 36 years, and I've known Dana for 38. And so I've been through many phases. I was a person, Mary Todd, before, even though I was very young. I was married when I was 23, and I immediately had a child. When Dana became very, very famous, you know, it was the whole thing with women screaming and grabbing him and all this sort of a thing. And people still do come up to tables and act as if I'm not there. I don't really mind anymore because I'm used to that and I just tune out, you know, and think my own thoughts. But they're very rude.
What was your reaction the first time
it happened? At first I thought, you know, I blamed myself. I thought, I must be terribly uninteresting. I go to these Hollywood parties and nobody pays any attention to me. Then I learned how to be very, very popular, and that's to listen. Because most actors and actresses don't listen. They're marvelous at entertaining people. But you get a listener, and they're the most popular person there. Because, you know, they need you.
You've been married for 36 years, and every marriage, regardless of how long it is, has its peaks and valleys, its high points and low points. The low points in your particular relationship, did it happen when things were going real well for Dana or when they were not going well for Dana?
Well, they happened. They went... the very, very first was great, and now we're going through a wonderful period. But Dana's come out and said that he was an alcoholic, that really, when you say that, anybody that's acquainted with this problem knows that that's going to make problems for everybody in the family. And I think I should let him speak for himself as far as that's concerned.
Dana?
Well, that's exactly accurate as far as that goes. There... because of the ingrained feelings that men had when I grew up, and my father was, I'm sure he was a male chauvinist, I'm afraid I was not as sympathetic to the way Mary felt as I should have been. because she did have moments when she was pretty unhappy about the fact that she was sitting around and she hadn't done her acting. And so I was just not as sympathetic as I could have been, but she did have the opportunity to exercise her abilities. Because she did do some plays while we were, while I was off sometimes. I would be away on location or something, and she would go to the playhouse and do a play. And I must tell you this one, because in about 1952, after I'd been a movie star for 12 years, and we were in, we did a summer stock of The Glass Menagerie, one, I think, of Tennessee Williams' best play. And we had June Walker, one of the great actresses of the screen, I mean of the stage, which most people don't remember, but a young budding actor from the Actor's Studio in New York by the name of Walter Matthau played the gentleman caller, and I played the brother, the movie star. Well, Richard Aldrich was the producer. That's Gertrude Lawrence's husband, in case people don't remember that. And he got the New York critics to come up to Cape Cod to see our opening up there. And of all these people, these four people, one really non-practicing professional, she got the best reviews of all of us. They said it's worth a trip to Cape Cod.
Well, of course,
to see
part
Mary
of that
Todd
is the
Flora.
Part. I want to say something about actresses and parts, because you know, in this play, there are many, many good parts. Mine is kind of a functional part. I don't say it's a bad part, but it is not a part that you can make a big impression in. But
you're not going to win the Tony Award.
No,
for that.
And I don't think Ellen Burstyn wouldn't get right, it yeah. either, right. you know, or Katharine Hepburn. So I want to say, because I don't want people to think they're going to come and see a marvelous actress, because they'll say, well, you know, that you know, he's that's his wife. He, I do what I can do with a part. But an actor and actress has to give life to the playwright's words, and without a great actress in The Glass Menagerie, such as Lorette Taylor or someone that's equally good, the play wouldn't come to life. But then on the other hand, an actress can do nothing without a good role. You have to have it.
I want to pause here for a moment, and then we will continue with Dana Andrews and Mary Todd Andrews. They're currently appearing at the Forum Theater in Summit, Illinois, and the gang's all here. I'd like to take a moment of your time right now to talk about Nunabells at 1108 Bryn Mawr in Chicago. They've been in business for over 80 years. They're a Northside tradition, and they've maintained this tradition because of their fine service, not only in providing people with the very finest in fashions, but also serving them in a relaxed, friendly way. Sales personnel at Nunabells are there to assist you in your wardrobe selection, but there's never any pushing and shoving, the type of feeling that you get at some of the major shopping centers. And the merchandise, well, it's the very finest. All nationally advertised brands, the brands you see in the major fashion magazines. Kay Windsor, Vicky Todd, HIS, Jonathan Logan. The top names in both the Missy and Junior shops. So that there's something for every size, something for every taste. See for yourself that the combination of quality merchandise and a relaxed shopping atmosphere can really make shopping fun again. Stop in at Nunabells, 1108 Bryn Mawr in Chicago. Bruce Dumont back at the Gallatin with Dana Andrews and Mary Todd, and we were talking specifically about ups and downs and peaks and valleys and personal careers and everything else with Dana. Dana, when did you realize that you had a drinking problem?
Well, that takes a long time, Bruce. See, I started drinking when during Prohibition. And one of the things that I'm on the National, the Alcoholism Council of Greater Los Angeles, which is part of the National Council, Alcoholism Council. And the biggest problem that I feel is today, people say, are you advocating no drinking at all? And no. I don't think that we tried that and it didn't work. I think though the public should realize what I didn't realize, and that is anybody, you, me, anybody, can become an alcoholic. It is no something that only just certain people have. Those certain people have abused the privilege of drinking beyond the point. But if a person just drinks a little bit now and then, why, I don't think there's any chance of becoming an alcoholic, unless there's something peculiarly individual in them. But I think that children should know, right now, a major problem, the cause of death between the ages of 15 and 32 is alcohol, number one. This is information I got from the National Highway Administration, because they are following this thing about drunks on the road. And this is a shocking thing, that the kids are swinging from heroin and LSD, which they have found out is no good. They go over to liquor because the parents do it. They don't get busted if they get caught drinking.
And it's legal.
And it's legal. That's what I mean. They don't get busted for that. And just marijuana, well, they'll get busted. Although marijuana, it has its faults too, as I understand now. They're beginning to find out because they're testing it for the first time. They never had enough marijuana to test it before, you know, that they couldn't get it. And now they have tested it, and they find out that it changes the DNA. It makes changes in that, and it makes in your immunities to diseases and things like that. It alters that so that you're much more immune. Your immunity system doesn't work the way it did. And it has your work as well as your memory is affected by it. And of course, driving a car, marijuana is almost like alcohol. That you can do some very bad things with that. Mm-hmm. But what I think is the public should realize, that young people should realize, when they start to drink, that if they're going to drink, don't drink enough to get high. You can feel it and have a good, nice feeling, but not enough to get high continually. If you do, you'll become addicted. And once you've got it, now, there are very various ways of approaching this, but once you've got it, there is no way that you can alter it except just don't drink anymore, period. Because the minute you drink too much.
Okay, we have to break on that. Some of the stations along the network line must leave us now. Our guests today, Dane Andrews and Mary Todd, they're appearing at the Forum Theater in Summit, Illinois, and the gang's all here. They'll be in town through the 24th, and get out and support local theater and go out and see Dane Andrews and lovely wife, Mary Todd. For those along the net who can stick with us, we will continue with our discussion.